Earth Eats is a production of WFIU and Indiana Public Media.
Welcome to Earth Eats, a show of real food and green living. I'm Annie Corrigan.
By and large, farmers are a very adaptable bunch. It is, I think, the number one skill for anybody in agriculture is adaptability.
The weather has certainly tested farmers in that way so far this season, but the show must go on, as they say, and that means it's time for farmers markets. Robin Hobson of the Bloomington Community Farmers Market gives us some insider information about how markets are organized. Unmanned aerial vehicles on the farm, Harvest Public Media finds out what the benefit could be. Organic gardening at a fire station, then Eric Brown talks about foraging for maple syrup, dandelion greens, and even turkeys. And Daniel Orr cooks up some of those dandelion greens, so good you'll forget they're a weed. Food news for the week with Lou Ann Johnson.
Climate change will cause a squeeze on the world's food supply, exacerbating global hunger and poverty. That's what a United Nations scientific panel said this week. The Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, which consists of 400 authors, reviewed 1,200 studies. It found that a warming world is bad for crop yields, slowing and decreasing key crops needed to feed communities worldwide. Food prices will rise globally, some estimates say as high as 84% by 2050. Climate change could also result in warming oceans, which will mean less fish yields. One bright spot in the report is the ability for innovation and creativity to meet the challenges of climate change. Soda sales are on the decline. Overall, soda sales dropped 3% last year, according to new numbers. 2014 has also seen additional decline. To date, purchases in the U.S. have dropped 1.9%. And it isn't just the corn syrupy, calorie-laden stuff either. Purchases of diet soda dropped last year, further accelerating a ninth straight year of decline. A new study presented at the American College of Cardiology's annual scientific session also found that older, healthy women who consume two or more diet drinks a day are at greater risk for cardiovascular problems. The study is the largest conducted to examine diet soda and heart health. Of the almost 60,000 postmenopausal women studied, those who drink diet soda were 30% more likely to have a cardiovascular problem than those who don't. And a new report says Indianapolis and Oklahoma City are the worst cities in the nation for what are known as food deserts, areas that don't have easy access to fresh, healthy foods. The website WalkScore ranked cities based on whether residents lived within a 5-minute walk of a grocery store. 72% of people in New York City meet the criterion, ranking it number one in the survey. Only 5% of people in Indy and OKC were that close to a grocery store. Thanks to our reporters, Liz Leslie and Chad Bouchard, for these stories. Read more, as always, at eartheats.org.
They post stories all throughout the week on our website. Keep up with what we're following by connecting with us on Twitter and Facebook at Earth Eats. Our food news, courtesy of Lou Ann Johnson.
Thanks.
With hundreds or even thousands of acres to keep track of, checking the health of crops is a challenge for large corn, wheat, and soybean farmers in the Midwest. That's why many are eager to get their hands on remote-controlled planes or helicopters that could help them scan their land. Tech-savvy farmers have been waiting for years for the government to make up its mind about the commercial use of unmanned aerial vehicles. Will 2014 be the year farmers get their hands on drones? Harvest Public Media's Peter Gray takes a look.
Agriculture consultant Chad Colby likes to talk about cutting-edge technology. He runs AgTechTalk.com and teaches about the latest and the greatest advances available to farmers, including the quadcopters he's brought for test flights today.
And then start to beep it. There you go. So that's all good. Now let's go inside.
After a safety lesson, farmers who've paid to hear Colby's tech talk each get a turn at the controls, zipping up and down, spinning and swooping.
It's so exciting to see that look in these guys' face after they fly it, that, wow, this is easy and I can do it. And oh my, do I get to see my crop in a different perspective.
They may be fun, but unmanned aerial vehicles, UAVs, are serious business for farmers who absolutely must check for pest or weather damage, like Jared Brown of Beeson, Illinois.
And I've been a seed dealer and involved with Precision Ag, and I look at this from a scouting standpoint. Getting farmers out in their field, knowing what's going on in their field more would be a huge benefit.
Farmers with acres and acres of land want to keep an eye on their investment. Instead of spending days driving the edges of fields in a truck or ATV, drone-mounted cameras can use thermal image maps to tell if crops aren't properly irrigated or if they're being eaten by insects. The same rugged yet inexpensive video cameras strapped to surfboards and skydivers can gather the visuals farmers need for a fraction of what they'd pay to hire a plane or helicopter pilot. Mark Sullivan of Rushville, Illinois, is in his early 20s and is on the tech-savvy end of farmers. He says drones fit right in with recent innovations designed to get as much out of a field as possible.
The yield monitors are getting better, and the planters are getting more accurate, and the tractors are getting more efficient. You know, everything is developing on its own, but you don't have true precision ag in its fullest form until you use all of them.
Of course, there are plenty of privacy and public safety concerns when it comes to camera-mounted machines flying around. That's why anyone flying a drone for business instead of a hobby is actually breaking federal law. The Federal Aviation Administration is working on rules for the commercial use of UAVs, but for now, they're grounded. Ben Gilo is with the Association for Unmanned Vehicle Systems International, an industry trade group.
We have been trying to work with the FAA to allow for some expedited access, and we've pointed rural farms as a great area where some limited operations could happen very soon, if not immediately.
And an FAA spokesman told me there will be a rule out this year for commercial use of small UAVs, but he says FAA's rulemaking for a potentially risky technology like this is slow and deliberate. The farmers who have been waiting years to get their hands on drones would agree.
I applaud the FAA.
That's ag consultant Chad Colby again.
They need to do this correct because there's nothing I want more than safe airspace. I'm a pilot. I want privacy over my home.
Colby is looking forward to a future in which commodity farmers can fly over their fields. They could cut down on fertilizer by targeting the specific areas that need it most or plant different crop varieties based on moisture levels. He says having safely piloted eyes in the sky will make precision ag really take off in years to come. If a grower wants to buy a small drone and camera to buzz over fields of corn or beans, they'd better make sure it's for pleasure and not for profit, at least for the next several months. Peter Gray, Harvest Public Media.
Harvest Public Media is a reporting collaboration focused on issues of food, fuel, and field. More stories like this one at harvestpublicmedia.org.
We are outside Showers City Hall. We are on the parking lot that has the covered shelters. There are four of them, and the covered shelters, aside from hosting weekly parking of city employees on Saturday, is transformed into the farmers market.
Let's keep walking. Farmers market season is here, believe it or not. It's a chance for eaters to get better connected with the farmers who grow their food. It's the go-to event in many communities on Saturday mornings. We wanted to find out what happens behind the scenes at farmers markets. Who gets approved to sell food? How are the tables organized? That sort of thing. We presented these questions to Robin Hobson, market master at the Bloomington Community Farmers Market.
There are 100 mark spaces on the farmers market parking lot, and we do have the capability for hosting more than 100 farm vendors on a given Saturday.
Can you remember who's going to be right here, numbers 1 and 2?
Not off the top of
you. Don't you mean you don't know where every single producer?
Well, it changes every year according to our space reservation meeting and who jockeys for what position.
More about the space reservation meeting in just a minute. This is a milestone year for the Bloomington Community Farmers Market. It's 40th. They've accepted around 130 vendors, but Hobson explains that not everyone will be there every week. For instance, asparagus vendors will only show up for the month of April. As market master, she oversees all on-site activity every Saturday morning, which means she arrives around 5:30 a.m. And yes, some vendors are already there by then, so she gets to see them setting up their tables.
I get most excited about how excited vendors are to be bringing what's coming out of their gardens. You know, look at my lettuce, look at my beets. I enjoy the pride on their faces as they're setting up and making their wares available.
The Bloomington Market was the first market in Indiana to accept SNAP benefits or food stamps and has been doing so since 2007. Over the past several years, they've been offering doubled benefits, so each SNAP dollar goes twice as far.
To demonstrate how successful the Double Market Bucks program has been, in 2012, the amount of Market Bucks purchased was about $5,000. With the Double Your Market Bucks program starting in 2013, the amount of Market Bucks purchased reached over $33,000, or a 543% increase.
What are the requirements for a vendor or producer to set up a table at the Bloomington Community Farmers Market?
The first requirement is that vendors at the market are the people who produce the food you see on the table. The grower is the seller. We are a producer-only market. So what you see is what is grown by the person behind the table.
As a customer, we sort of trust the Bloomington Community Farmers Market label. How do you guys, as the organizers, vet these producers to make sure that they are doing what they say they're doing?
Well, it starts with an application process. In the first weeks of February, we send out an application packet that includes application paperwork, a contract, and the handbook that states the rules of the market. And then we get a number of responses, and we very carefully pore over every application to determine whether those products qualify, whether the people growing them can be considered small farmers.
I've always wondered, in addition to how you guys vet the producers, thanks for answering that, how you organize where everyone is located, because location is key for some of these tables.
It's true. Location is everything. And a question that I receive pretty frequently from new vendors coming in the market is, tell me what spot is the best place for me to go? And you know what? I stopped answering that question a long time ago, because what does best for one producer might not be the best for someone else. I always say it is a matter of just trying a spot out and seeing how it works for you. We have 100 mark spaces available on the pavement on Saturday. And those spaces are assigned some to reserve vendors who will use them, have the right to use them every Saturday during the season. But we do not assign all spaces. And that's to accommodate people who come infrequently to the market or who do not have access to reserving spaces. By that, I mean vendor space assignments are granted based on the number of points that you receive for attendance in past markets. Those who have come the most and during the most recent years have the most points. And in March, we have a space reservation meeting where everyone interested in reserving a space comes to the council chambers. We fill it up. It's a big event. And spaces are given away. In those cases where vendors have the same number of points, we make it a lottery system where they draw numbers to see out of that points group who gets to choose their space first.
Oh, I wish I'd been there for that. Was it raucous?
It went remarkably smoothly this year.
Okay, so it snowed a couple days ago. We're going to get torrential downpours tonight and tomorrow, and then it's going to be in the upper 60s on Sunday, typical Indiana spring. Are you speaking with farmers about how their planting and their harvesting is going earlier this year?
Yeah, I did. I spoke with a few vendors over the past few weeks at the space reservation meeting and over the phone. And, you know, many of our producers do have season extension methods like greenhouses or row covers or other ways of extending the harvest that gives a little bit of shelter from the weather. But by and large, a cold spring is going to delay some products. But at the first market, we can expect to see all manner of greens, including, you know, arugula and spinach and kale. But we'll also see storage products like meats, dried flowers. Last year's sweet potatoes crop is still hanging in there very well. We'll see radishes and honey, dried herbs, maple syrup,
So there will still be quite a bit of product available in early April. There have been April markets that have been a little fuller and some that have been a little less full. But, you know, by and large, farmers are a very adaptable bunch. It is, I think, the number one skill for anybody in agriculture is adaptability. And I think the cold weather is going to delay things that come out of the ground. It's going to delay putting in things like tomatoes and peppers and basil if it continues much into April.
And let's just hope that doesn't happen. Thanks to Robin Hobson, market master of the Bloomington Community Farmers Market. More about this at eartheats.org. Coming up in the kitchen.
What we want to do is create what my grandfather called a pot liquor, and that's the juice that's in the bottom of a batch of greens. And we always put a little bit of vinegar. We even kept a cruet of vinegar on the dinner table that you could add to your pot liquor and drink it at the end of the bowl of greens.
Those greens are the dandelion variety. Hey, it's not a weed if you can eat it. Well, that's what Chef Daniel Orr likes to say. Production support for Earth Eats comes from Blooming Foods. Fresh, local, organic food with delis at all three locations and a garden center on East 3rd Street. BloomingFoods.coop. Touchstone Wellness, providers of therapeutic massage and yoga instruction, offering a variety of healing massage styles and yoga levels. At the corner of Buick Cadillac Boulevard and Auto Mall Road, one block east of College Mall Road. Touchstone Wellness, massage and yoga. More at touchstonewellness.com. And Bloomington Hypnosis, with certified hypnotist and self-hypnosis instructor John Hunkler, helping clients relax into weight loss for health and fitness. Bloomington Hypnosis, 812-200-5005.
Welcome back to Earth Eats. I'm Annie Corrigan.
Tomatoes. Lots and lots of tomatoes.
No, we haven't fast-forwarded to July, unfortunately. We visited this garden last summer with Daniel Orr when it was at the height of production. What made it special is that it's on the grounds of a fire station. The firefighters are responsible for maintaining it, and then they get to cook with the harvest. This week, the local gardener responsible for bringing fresh food to firefighters broke ground on another garden at a Bloomington firehouse. Let's do some daydreaming and hear what this garden could become in a few months.
Yeah, well, you think of a firehouse and you think of things like chili and salsa and kind of spicy foods and good pasta sauces. It's a really nice combination of tomatoes. You see these really healthy, big globe tomatoes. If we come around this way, we've got some cucumbers. We've got lots of beautiful big jalapeno plants.
Oh, yeah.
And they're coming on, and these are mean. I had one of these the other day. Farrell brought me, and it just bit me back. So some lettuce growing along the edge here. A lot of times you want to grow your tender vegetables like lettuce in the shade, especially during these hot days. So you can either have the tomatoes growing up and have them growing under there. You could have trellised cucumbers and have your lettuce growing underneath there.
Farrell Johnson is the gardener responsible for installing this plot at the fire station. He's also the owner-operator of Abundant Harvest Farms. In addition to spreading the good word about organic gardening, Johnson uses these raised beds as advertisement for his organic plant food and soil amendment.
Yeah, the soil situation is we use the native clay and then we bring in certain percentages of compost and sand, basically a soil optimization method that anyone can really do, and that's what we're trying to demonstrate here is that when you properly organize and set up the bed, you're going to have a lot more success, and success will keep people interested.
The firefighters have been enjoying the harvest in their daily meals. That's according to Roger Kerr, chief of the City of Bloomington Fire Department. In fact, he said he plucked some tomatoes out of the garden for his breakfast this morning.
Think of it like he was at home. It's just like an extended family. So, you know, breakfast, usually they kind of bring their own stuff. Lunch is kind of light because we're working. It's hot outside. But then at supper time, It can range anything from a sandwich all the way up to, you know, a full-blown Thanksgiving meal. So just whatever the thoughts of the day are, but it's nice to be able to walk out and have your fresh vegetables right here and not have to go get them at a grocery store.
Well, let's talk about this specific setup. So we've got two raised beds here, and the first thing that I notice is that there is no tree cover, so you probably get a lot of full sun for the majority of the day.
Yeah, and that's kind of why we chose it. And also, with the raised beds, we wanted to position them close to a water source, and that was one of the obvious benefits of the fire department. It's what they do best. When I approached Chief Kerr, and he could guarantee that they could keep it watered every other day, we knew it was going to be a perfect fit.
So do you have some sort of, like, list in the firehouse?
Actually, just inside the door, there's a calendar on the wall. Somebody comes out in the morning when they first get here. Shift changes at 7, so we do all of our routine maintenance and cleaned up usually from 7 to 8. So somebody's taking that on themselves in the mornings. They came out, they water it, they just put their initials on the counter and check it so that we know it's been done. And it's been a great asset. It's kind of caught on and everybody has bought into it.
Try that at home, you know, have a checkoff list and have the whole family out there working.
The chef was saying actually that the peppers are especially hot. Have you tried one?
They have found that out. I'm not a big pepper fan and hot fan, but I have heard him say at the table that the peppers are hot. So if you're going to eat them, be prepared.
We've posted a pretty cool picture of several firefighters using a gigantic hose to water the garden. See it at eartheats.org. In the first half of the show, Robin Hobson was saying we could see the effects of the wacky winter weather in the summer harvest. Crops could be delayed. Foragers are worried about the same thing, but their concerns are more immediate because early spring is a prime time for wild edibles.
I tapped the trees, I think, in the middle of February, hoping that we would get some sap. And we had some flow for a couple days, and then, of course, we had those cold snaps that came through, which really stopped the flow.
Eric Brown is a homesteader and forager living in southern Maine. The sap flow has been on and off all season, but he has managed to collect 55 gallons so far. His home is surrounded by nature preserves and undeveloped land, so he can harvest wild foods like stinging nettles and Japanese knotweed shoots. To him, foraging also means hunting. He believes that if he's going to eat meat, then he needs to be able to kill it.
It's a tough call because, frankly, I don't like killing things. I don't think anybody likes killing things. But, again, as a meat eater, it's one of those things that I felt like I needed to be able to do.
He started hunting only 5 years ago. And actually, his dedication to gardening and raising chickens and rabbits also started well into his adult life. He's co-authored the book Browsing Nature's Isles with his wife, Wendy. Here is 1 minute with author Eric Brown.
We were raised with the traditional, you know, suburban kind of upbringing. You know, we went to McDonald's, we went to Burger King, we went to Wendy's, and we had our jobs, and we had bought our cars. And so we really came at this really late in life. Most people who start foraging, you know, were taught by their grandparents or their parents early on in life. And, we're actually, you know, in our 40s just starting out. And so self-sufficiency is kind of a moving target for us. We do go to the grocery store. We do buy things at the grocery store. But we do try to grow as much as we can on our own. And the foraging was really an extension of that homesteading to get to the point where, you know, we could rely less and less on the grocery store.
Great. Thank you, Eric. This has been wonderful.
Well, thank you so much, Ann.
Yeah, have a great day.
Bye.
Forager and author Eric Brown. His book is Browsing Nature's Isles. Before we let him go, I wanted to ask him about the ubiquitous and annoying plant, the dandelion. That will be one of the first things we see pop up this spring, and yes, you can eat it.
Well, for dandelion greens, we like to eat them fresh in salads. So when they're really young, they're actually really nice. They've got a slightly bitter taste, or they can, and I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. But the dandelion doesn't stop at just the greens. Just about every part of the dandelion is edible. So while we'll be looking for the greens in the spring, in the fall we'll be looking for the roots. You can roast them up and grind them up, and it makes a nice tea. People say it's a coffee substitute. It's got a nice flavor. And, of course, the flowers are edible as well.
Keep that info in the back of your mind as the season goes on. Reference Eric Brown's tips at eartheats.org. Chef Daniel Orr also likes a raw dandelion green salad, but this recipe for us today, he's cooking them with some new potatoes and local Italian sausage. He's chopped up the dandelion greens into 3-inch pieces, but we don't actually add them until the very end.
Okay, we're going to add a little bit of olive oil. You don't need to use your most expensive extra virgin olive oil for this. It's going in at the very beginning of the cooking. You want to save your good extra virgin olive oils for finishing dishes like drizzling over pastas or using in salad dressings, because if you cook those nice green olive oils, you're just going to cook out the flavor. It'll actually evaporate into your exhaust fan. So you're just paying $16 a liter for nothing. So use your less expensive or mixed olive oil for this to get started. What I've done is I've tossed in my local sausage. What we want to do is to cook the sausage till it starts to brown. That way it develops some of the flavor. You want to, anytime you brown meat, it kind of caramelizes the proteins and the sugars, and that's where you get the nice, rich flavor. All right, once your sausage has started letting out some of the fat and starting to color, we're going to add some onions. And again, we're going to let those cook for a few minutes. We want them to start to caramelize. The onions will release some sugar. They're very sweet, and especially during the summertime when you can get Vidalia onions and other real sweet varieties of onions, use those for this dish because, again, you're taming the wild beast, the dandelion. I'm going to season this with a little salt and pepper. And I'm also going to add my garlic at this time. Depending on how much salt is in your sausage, you want to season that way. So taste your sausage, see how spicy it is, how salty it is, and then you can add a little additional seasoning. And the aromas are starting to really come out. I love the smell of cooking onions and garlic. They say that when you're trying to sell your house, you should either roast a chicken or cook a pot of onions, and then it will smell like home. Once that sausage and onions have started to brown, you're going to add your potatoes. Now, you could do it two ways. You could either put them raw in here and then cook them a little bit longer, or you can do as I did today, and I have a selection of red, white, and blue potatoes that I've par-cooked ahead of time, so it's a little bit quicker cooking method. Okay, and then finally I'm going to add our dandelion greens, just kind of laying those across the top, and that almost forms a little lid over the potatoes and sausage mixture. And now we're going to add the acid to the dish. And what we want to do is create what my grandfather called a pot liquor. And that's the juice that's in the bottom of a batch of greens. And we always put a little bit of vinegar. We even kept a cruet of vinegar on the dinner table that you could add to your pot liquor and drink it at the end of the bowl of greens.
Another great recipe from Daniel Orr, and some extra pro tips in there for good measure. This recipe, a photo, and plenty of inspiration at eartheats.org. Thanks to everyone who helps make Earth Eats possible, including Ayabon Binder, Chad Bouchard, Eric Brown, Robin Hobson, Luann Johnson, Liz Leslie, Daniel Orr, and everyone at Harvest Public Media. Production support for Earth Eats comes from Blooming Foods, fresh, local, organic food with delis at all three locations and a garden center on East 3rd Street, bloomingfoods.coop. Touchstone Wellness, providers of therapeutic massage and yoga instruction, offering a variety of healing massage styles and yoga levels at the corner of Buick Cadillac Boulevard and Auto Mall Road, one block east of College Mall Road. Touchstone Wellness, massage and yoga. More at touchstonewellness.com. And Bloomington Hypnosis, with certified hypnotist and self-hypnosis instructor John Hunkler, helping clients relax into weight loss for health and fitness. Bloomington Hypnosis, 812-200-5005. Earth Eats is a production of WFIU and Indiana Public Media. Will Murphy, executive producer. Another week of local, sustainable food. Thank you for joining us for Earth Eats. I'm Annie Corrigan.